Hey, this is Jonathan Goodman, and I have incredibly exciting news. My book, The Obvious Choice, is now available for purchase in Kindle, in Audible, and in hardcover. Anywhere that you find books, please go on Amazon, please go to whatever bookstore you like, buy yourself a copy, buy a copy for a friend. Hope that you absolutely love it. Now let's get into the show. Welcome back to the Obvious Choice podcast. I'm here with Mike, and Mike, you are somebody, so, okay. Let's back up a little bit. You owned an adventure mountain bike company for a lot of years, taking people on all of these crazy trips all around the world. And now your company is Wayfinders, really. How would you define your customers? Entrepreneurs mostly?
They're all entrepreneurs. I would say what unites them is they're growth minded and they're bold. They're into crazy adventures.
Crazy adventures. Perhaps that's the title of this episode, the power of the benefits of crazy adventures. So you just came back from Papua New Guinea with a whole whack of people. I want to hear a little bit about that. I did one of your trips for everybody listening to Greenland in 2021. And it was just actually after the COVID-19 restrictions were taken off. God, that I cannot even imagine what you went through to get us all there. I mean, we had to do COVID tests in the Copenhagen airport. We spent like $300 each on those things. But what I've always been really interested in is just how much facilitation you do around these adventures and how much more powerful it is because you're doing it on an adventure. There's so much said about therapy. There's so much said about reconnecting to who you were as a way to try to figure out who you were to become. I think what's lost in all of that is perhaps the power of doing hard shit amongst other people and then using that to open up. How did you happen across this? How did this come about?
Yeah. Well, the hard shit is, my model, I call it the 3 C's model, and the three C's our challenge, community, and culture. And we can get into the other. We can get into the other two, but the challenge part is very intentional.
Yeah.
And, you know, going back to when I started this company, it was really the objective was to create a different type of entrepreneur conference because I was going to all these different conferences, and some of them that that we've both been to, and I was getting value. The primary value I was getting from them was the people that I was connecting with, but they weren't set up for that. They were set up for lots of information from the stage, from a workshop or whatever. Mm. And what I wanted something that was connection first. And from my mountain bike company, back in the days when I used to guide and I would take people out into the Rockies and around the world, I knew that when you take people outdoors and you're doing fun, challenging shit together, that tends to bring people together quickly. Mm. And so, an extreme example of that is when, you go to war and you've got your platoon. And, we've all heard the stories of soldiers who go off to war together and they form these incredibly intense bonds because they're literally looking after each other's lives and relying on each other. Yeah. And of course, going mountain biking in the Canadian Rockies is not going to war, but you're going through a shared experience, something that's really difficult. You're helping each other through it. You're looking after each other. You're going through the same thing together. And that brings people together. And so that's an important part of the model. It's not just for bringing people together, but it's also, when people stretch their limits and come against the edge of their limits, whether it's physical or emotional or whatever, it tends to stretch their capacity in the future. And then they have a new definition of what's possible for them.
One of the things that I noticed when we were on that Greenland trip was it was obviously difficult. I mean, the trip to get there was difficult in and of itself. I think there was 5 flights to get there and then 6 to get home, if I counted properly. And then, of course, we hiked a lot, these freezing cold boat trips. One can never have too many socks in the Arctic, I have now come to appreciate. But it challenged me. And that allowed me to open up. I actually, in preparation for this podcast, I went through my Wayfinders notebook back from 2021.
Mm.
And it was fun to read through all the chicken scratch of the stuff that I was going through at that time. And a lot of it is...
You were going through a lot at that time. I remember that.
We were going through a lot. Yeah, we were deep in the throes of miscarriages. The business was had a lot of opportunity, but was you know, deeply troubled. To say the worst. And I was trying to figure out my next steps. You know, whether was I? What's my? You know, how do I define myself? Am I a business guy? Am I a personal trainer? Am I an author? What am I? And I think if I didn't almost go on that big hike up that hill in the snow, or camp out in the Arctic, and I always joke, it's like, you know that feeling when you have to pee in the middle of the night, and it sucks, and you're warm in your bed and you don't want to get out and you have to pee. It's like, well, imagine doing that now, but you're in Greenland, and you're in your underwear and you can't find your socks, and you're in a tent.
And it's minus 20 outside.
It's minus 20 outside. It's a whole different element. What are some of the exercises that you found have been really beneficial for people? You know, after they've done something difficult, to continue opening up, whether it's around other people or even with themselves. Like, somebody has a hard workout. Is there something that they can do really quick? Somebody has maybe achieved a long-time goal of a 5K or 10K or half marathon or whatever. What's something that they can do to really add a lot more personal development into that?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I'm constantly playing around with that aspect of it, the facilitation mm-hmm. aspect and you know, the journey that we take people through. And ultimately, there's two goals. You know, I kind of tell people that it's really about a personal journey and a community experience, and just so happens that travel and adventure are the delivery mechanism for that, but it's not that isn't the point of it. The point of is to use those things to facilitate an outcome. And so the two outcomes I'm trying to facilitate are greater clarity, personal clarity. Who am I? What is my place in this world?
I was gonna ask you, what does that mean? Let's double tap on that a little bit. Like, what does that mean? Because that's one of those things that's kind of thrown around a lot that I've never quite understood.
Sure. I can try and break it down as simply as possible.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's clarity on who I am.
Okay.
And you know, we all, over the course of a lifetime, particularly through childhood, accumulate these messages about who we are and who we should be, what we should be.
Yeah.
Sometimes from well-meaning people, sometimes from ill-meaning people, but they leave an imprint on us. And, you know, Dr. Gabor Mate, you know, he has this this important framework that he shares, that as a child, we often have this trade-off between acceptance and authenticity. And what that means, you know, as a child, I'll give you an example. You know, you're a child and you get sad about something, you get emotional, you cry. And then you have a parent tells you, oh, don't cry.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're not really thinking about what they're saying to this child, but they're saying to this child, your current state, your current emotions are not valid. Mm-hmm. And then the child has this internal debate within themselves. Well, what do I do here? Do I stay true to myself? But, you know, I'm having this experience of being sad. Or do I choose acceptance? Because if I keep crying, I'm going to lose the acceptance of my father. And so,
right.
from Dr. Mate's perspective, the child chooses acceptance every time, because the alternative is too scary, right? Acceptance means I'm going to be taken care of and I belong. And so we learn to betray ourselves, you know, little by little. And this happens, you know, at home, it happens in the schoolyard or whatever. Somebody makes fun of our pants or whatever, and then we never wear those pants again, even though we totally love them. And then somebody tells us when we're singing, don't quit your day job. And, you know, depending on our emotional states, when these things happen, they can leave a deep mark. And so then that child never sings again. And so all of these things leave an imprint on who we think we are, who we think we should be, what we should do. Think of all the doctors and the lawyers in the world who are just doing that to please their parents.
Yeah.
And you can follow that path, you can follow that path until your grave. But there's a famous book written by this palliative care nurse, and she said the top regret of the dying is that they didn't live a life that felt true to them. And so that's what clarity is to me, is learning to live a life that feels true to you. And that requires reflection, requires honesty, dialogue with other caring people who are on the same journey. So that's the clarity part of it. And
So I constantly feel split and pulled between competing priorities, competing interests, competing stakeholders in me, as a person. I'm like you, I'm a father, I'm a professional. We're business owners, but I think any professional, you work for a company, it's the same thing. I'm a grown-up son. I'm fortunate to still have my parents around, but there's responsibilities that I welcome, but responsibilities that have to do with that. And then, of course, I'm a sibling. I've got two brothers and a sister, and then I've got step, siblings. Not to mention a husband, and then in between all of that, I feel like I have to keep myself fit and active. These are all different definitions of ourself, and I'm wondering then, based off of this personal identity piece, how do you remedy these things? How do you work with other? I know you've done a lot of work yourself on many of these, but how do you also work with others to remedy these things? I mean, to me, that's the constant push and pull of like the minute we're doing one thing well, we feel guilt for the other thing that perhaps we're not doing as well. Even if we are doing it as well, we just don't have as much viewership into it. What do you do? How do you put a magnifying glass on the right thing at the right time?
It's a great question, and I don't want to diminish the magnitude of the task, particularly as we enter, this phase of our lives where we're having kids, we have responsibilities, and at a certain point, you're trying to get ahead in your career, you're trying to raise kids, and this luxury of being true to yourself feels like a luxury. And it doesn't necessarily mean that, you have to just like smash everything and I'm now going to join the circus because, what's true to me is being a circus performer, right? But to me, it means honoring those parts of ourselves and if there's a part of me that's just, dying to sing, doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to quit my job and try and become and go on Canada's Got Talent, but maybe I'm just going to honor that. Maybe once a week I go to a local choir or whatever. But I think it's kind of like a muscle, and the more I can build it, the more I can honor that, the more I can pursue that path. And to answer your question, I think it involves being honest with yourself. It involves taking the time to be able to reflect. And to me, there's no better way in than time alone in nature for me. And if I can, it doesn't have to be days, it can be an afternoon spent in the wild, but just like being quiet and being intentional about that and listening to my own heart, listening to my own soul, and what is it trying to tell me? And sometimes the things that it's telling me can be quite difficult to hear, whether it's the wrong job or the wrong relationship or the wrong whatever, right? But it's very, because I've done this work on myself and I've worked with so many others, it's so easy to wake up one day, at the age of 40 or 45 or whatever, and be like, who am I? What is this life I built? This does not feel like my life at all. And often what happens if we don't pay attention to these things is that life just slaps us upside the head one day and we have a crisis. And sometimes that's precipitated by an internal spiritual crisis. So one day we wake up and that nagging is so intense that we can't take it any longer. Or there's an external crisis, like we lose a job or we lose a partner or whatever, and it's like this, cosmic uppercut that says like, what the hell are you doing? Pay attention to your life. So, no easy fixes, but it starts with being honest and listening to yourself. And I just want to follow up on, a few questions back, you asked about, the facilitation. The other aspect of it that I'm trying to create is an experience of deep connection between between people, because and you know, this is fueled in some ways by just seeing this crisis of disconnection and isolation in the world, and trying to do my part. Also, my own personal journey, you know, growing up, feeling very alienated, feeling a, you know, not a lot of sense of belonging in the world, and knowing how acute that pain is, and wanting to lessen that for others. And so, a big part of my facilitation is creating experiences where people feel safe enough to, you know, drop the mask, to be vulnerable. And when people are vulnerable together, they tend to connect really well. And so, if I can create a very safe experience for people to just show up and be themselves, you know, and open up about whatever it is that's going on in their life, they are naturally going to connect with others and maybe form some deep bonds. And that to me is very satisfying, when people can come away from these events with, you know, some a few solid, really solid friendships.
So I'm going to get back to the trips because there's an element to it that I think is really special. But first, here's something that I've always wanted to ask somebody like you who's done a tremendous amount of self-development work, because I have not done anywhere close to the amount that you have. I really haven't done that much, if I'm honest. So much of it seems just abstract and fluffy to me when you read it. So many of these topics. I mean, there was a book that you recommended to me. I can't remember even the name now, but he's by some executive coach that became very spiritual. I'm sure you know who I'm talking about. And I read it and I was like, I don't really get it. You know, this is just sounds like a whole bunch of word salad to me, man. And I know it's not. You know what I'm saying? But so much of this deep work that we do, there isn't a good way to verbalize it. And I think a lot of people, myself included, turn off from it because of this abstract nature. How did you get past that point? I mean, to do the work on yourself, like you have to self-analyze it. There's no framework that anybody can give you, really. And the frameworks all come off as so contrived anyway.
Well, to me, you know, the personal growth work, it's twofold. One is the inner work, and the inner work is really, you know, understanding myself, understanding the patterns that have, you know, guided me, informed me my whole life, most of them unconscious. And then there's the external, the actual behaviors, and you know, what's happening in the external world. And to me, it's important to have both. And it's very easy, and maybe you've heard this term, spiritual bypassing. You know, just I'm going to go on an ayahuasca journey, and I'm going to come back completely changed, and I can say like, oh, I'm so spiritually evolved. Really, you know, I've done a lot of medicine work, and I've done different modalities. The real testing ground is what happens in life afterwards.
So we were talking about the abstract nature of self-development and how to get over it by somebody who's done a lot of the work, because I have not yet been able to get over it. It's pretty rare that I find a book or a thought leader or something like that that I don't just immediately gloss over and kind of put to the side. But you haven't. And so I'm recognized now that I'm the one who's missing something. So what am I missing?
What are you missing? I mean, maybe you're not missing anything. You know, we've spent a decent amount of time together.
Like,
I
not in Canada, though, right? Like,
not in, yeah.
in just about every other country, but not in Canada.
Yeah, I mean, going back to the earlier point, I really think a lot of personal growth work is really that process of coming home to yourself, right? Like coming home to living a life that feels true to you. You certainly seem like somebody, you know, who's living a life mostly true to what it is that you know, that you want to do. You put great work out into the world that seems very authentic to you. So, you know, I want to be cautious about the, you know, I don't want to get into this notion that like everybody has to do personal growth work, and so much of personal growth can be a distraction, right? And I think of, like, you know, particularly in the world of medicine work, you know, psychedelic therapy and whatnot. So many people will go, you know, they'll go to Peru and they'll do some ayahuasca ceremonies, and they'll come back and say, okay, you know, been there, done that. I've done my personal work. I've done plenty of medicine work. And, you know, for me, it's like 10% of the actual growth or the work happens during the ceremony. The other 90% is, what do you do with that?
Yeah.
And, you know, to give you an example, you know, I had an experience last year that gave me some pretty clear directions. And that's what the work, you know, is really, really good for, is like shining a flashlight on the things that I need to think about, the things that I haven't been confronting.
Wait, tell me about that. What does that mean? I'm asking you for myself. Like this is the hidden secret of my podcast, is I'm bringing people on who I'm fascinated by, to have conversations that I would not otherwise have, because we're usually in social groups. What does that mean?
Well, you know, I want to preserve the anonymity of the people that are involved.
Sure.
But I received a fairly clear directive that there was a conversation that I needed to have with somebody in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what's funny is, like, you know, I didn't need a medicine ceremony to tell me that, but it gave me a different perspective on this thing and the conversation. And I don't know, I don't want to get cryptic about it, but it spoke to me in metaphors and basically said, like, there's something that this person is holding back from you.
Hmm.
And that you need to confront this thing.
Hmm. Okay.
Great. Clear direction. I sat on that for 10 months.
Hey, real quick, I wanted to invite you to buy a copy of my new book. It's called The Obvious Choice. And instead of me telling you about how good it is, what I'm going to do is just read a couple of the endorsements of others. So the first is from Jason Pfeiffer. He's the editor-in-chief for Entrepreneur Magazine. So you can imagine this guy has seen a lot of business books. Here's what he said about The Obvious Choice. He said, if you want to win in business without feeling like you have to win the internet, get this book. It can help any marketer, small business owner, and entrepreneur. Okay, here's another one from Harley Finkelstein. He is actually the president of Shopify. Again, if you want to find somebody who knows how to sell stuff, particularly sell stuff online, but really anywhere, like somebody who is the president of Shopify probably knows what he's talking about. So here's what he said. He said, consider this required reading for anyone running a small business. Goodman nails it when it comes to business insights. This book is filled with timeless advice, and unlike so many other business books, it's a joy to read. Every entrepreneur is going to get actionable takeaways from this read. If you're selling something, you need this book in your life. Trust me, you won't regret it. There's more endorsements you'll find on the Amazon page. Those aren't the only two, of course, but I'll stop there. Please go and buy a copy of the book. It's in hardcover, it's in Kindle, it's in audio, on Amazon, wherever you find books. Hope that you absolutely love it.
Didn't do anything about it because I was chicken shit.
Because it was a hard conversation to have.
Hard conversation to have.
Got it.
And, you know, did I grow from that experience? Hmm. Not really, you know. And so I'm happy to say that, like, a few months ago, I signed up for another medicine session with a different facilitator this time. And we had our intake call.
Okay.
And you know, God bless him, he's very gifted. He asked me, you know, have you worked with this medicine before? And I said, yes. Tell me about that. And I told him about all this stuff and, you know, this metaphor and this, you know. And he said, well, what did you do with that? And I said, nothing. I chickened out.
Yeah.
And he said, well, you know, and this was Monday and we were scheduled to do our ceremony on Friday. And he said, well, I'm not going to say no to doing this for you on Friday, but it doesn't feel right going into that with a whole bunch of unfinished business from your last experience.
Mm.
And he challenged me. And said, you know, I'm going to invite you to try and close that loop before our next session. And that felt like a punch to the gut. I was like, oh, God, now, you know, now I've got another person to be accountable to. I ended up having that conversation. It was difficult, but nowhere near as difficult as I'd built it up to be. It was also cathartic, transformative, shifted my relationship with this person. And that was the work. And I didn't really need the medicine to do that, because I just had this sneaking suspicion, but it happened to be the catalyst that made this all happen. It also, I think, lessened a little bit of the anxiety I'd held for so many years about this conversation. And so, personal growth work, where you're just talking about stuff and you're just focusing on your inner state or your history or whatever, that's all useful. But if it's not resulting in tangible differences in your day-to-day, how you show up in the world, the relationships that you have, a lot of it to me is actually confronting the things that we shy away from for, so long, a difficult decision or a challenging conversation or whatever, right? And we all have these things that kind of sit in the background, and we know we should do something about them. We know that we're in the wrong job, or that, we know that we have to have this tough conversation with our sister, or whatever, but and we don't do it. And that's sometimes where a therapist or a medicine journey can come in and just say, you need to fucking do this, right? And that's the growth.
I wonder if sometimes it happens the other direction too. You need to fucking do this, or you need to appreciate that you're not going to do this and put it behind you. It's this, it's almost like a, what are we here for, right? You're gonna show up or not. Stop being kind of half in. Let's move on either way. Right, let's move on with this person or move on not with this person. I guess it makes sense what you're talking about. I mean, for me, my therapy is writing. With my next book, there's a lot of it. It's interesting. I'm in the final stages of my paper and pen edits. The manuscript is due in 2 weeks, the final manuscript. And I said to Allison yesterday, I was like, it's actually really great, because I'm writing about I write about adult friendships a fair bit in that. I write about gratefulness. I write about there's a lot of stories about being a father. It's much more personal. It's about life intentionality, the book. But there's a lot of little things to do and little moments where it's very easy to make a decision that you would otherwise regret, perhaps later on. And I said to Allison, I was like, it's actually great. I've been implementing a lot of stuff in my book, and it's really had a good impact. I was like, holy shit, it seems like this stuff works. She's like, you're surprised? I was like, I mean, kinda. But I guess the point is that I have to be reminded myself of all of the ways that I want to act, of the type of dad that I want to be, because it's very easy to be sitting there thinking that I have some work thing that's going to build and give me some immediate gratification or immediate result that is external, versus all of the internal stuff, or the stuff that is going to have a more delayed result much later on, which often has to do with our relationships or our health. It's very easy to excuse away internal tasks for external tasks, as external tasks are much more immediate.
The
And
busy
so
work.
writing, it sounds like what you're talking about is similar to me with writing, is like you do this work and it helps you recognize the shit that you kind of know anyway. But it triggers something in your brain. It makes it more present of the type of person, the type of man that you want to become. Is that, did I read that right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big believer in writing, and journaling, but only if you're willing to write honestly. Because it's easy to spill a bunch of bullshit on a page. Even your own journal, right? It's so hard to get out of conditioned patterning about, these ways that we think we need to show up in the world, to the point where even when you're just sitting alone with your own private thoughts and pen and paper, you can bullshit your way onto the paper. And and 100 times more so when you're writing something publicly, like a book, right? Because it's hard, it's hard to be honest, right? Because it can feel very vulnerable, and there's a persona we want to project into the world of who we are and how much we have our shit together or whatever. And the best writing is writing that is unflinchingly honest, you know, you're with yourself. And then when you do that, that process can be extremely cathartic.
You triggered something in me. So I've been using AI to improve my writing as a thought partner a lot, especially in these late stages of edits. I wrote the first three drafts of the manuscript, and then I started using Claude mostly, just as a debate partner, as a thought partner, help me find my logical inconsistencies, expose me to my blind spots. Where am I being abstract where I can perhaps be more concrete? Where am I being too boring? That type of stuff. And but that's an interesting one. Where am I bullshitting myself? Where am I not going deep enough? Where am I not being honest with myself and my story? And I feel like probably AI would call you out on that, because I have had, of course, editors and beta readers, but they're all people now that I have a relationship with. I mean, my editor, this is the second book I've worked with him, like we like each other a lot. The beta readers are, of course, people that I, like, that know me. It would be hard for all of them to be unflinchingly honest on those deeper emotional things that are particularly resonant. Having a objective third party that holds no emotional grudges, that if you tell it to be honest, will be completely honest with you, where you can't hurt its feelings and it doesn't give a shit about yours. That could be a really interesting use for it. How would you, what's a prompt there? What do you think? Tell me.
Well, I think you need to have a history with that particular AI model,
You think so?
right? Well, I mean, how's it going to call you out on your bullshit if it doesn't know, you know, because if you
It would probably be able to recognize common cover-up type language. Like even I, like there's certain words that you use, like success. It's like success is not a word that means anything to anybody. It's a lazy term or phrase that's used when you can't think of something better to convey a general idea that you feel like is positive. It could probably identify words like that.
Well, let me give you an example. I'm also writing a book, and I think it's maybe aligned with some of these themes that you already talked about. And it's a book about
When's it coming
it's a
out? Is my
book.
coming out first?
I'm so far behind. Yeah, you're still sticking up for it is a book about human connection. It is also a book about the particular challenges of human connection, you know, in adult life, in later adult life. While we were in Papua New Guinea, we were talking about this, is that, you know, at certain points of our lives, if you look at it as a funnel, it's like the funnel is getting filled, like university, you know, you're meeting so many new people, whatever, and then you start your working career and meeting new people, and then you get to a certain point in your life, you know, especially when you have kids, and then, you know, maybe you meet a few of your kids' friends, parents, or whatever. But then at a certain point, you know, people start dropping off or whatever, and the funnel isn't getting filled up and people are dropping out of there. And I hear this from a lot of people. And you outgrow certain people, right? Like, there's a lot of my university friends that I don't hang out with anymore because we've kind of moved in different directions. And so, you know, another theme in this book is how do we form real, genuine, authentic connections where I don't have to show up, I don't have to show up any differently with you than I do with anybody else, and I can just be my true, genuine self. Whereas, you know, for a lot of my life, I had relationships where I would show up this way in this relationship and this way in another, and I don't have time for that shit anymore. Anyway, I could write that book as a, you know, from the point of an expert, and I've learned these things and I've learned these things, and now look at me, I'm such a pro in this field of human connection. if I were to be honest, I still struggle with loneliness all the time. I went through a separation 18 months ago that sort of cleaved a big part of my social life in two. And I'm now trying to replace, and some of those were relationships of convenience, and I'm now trying to replace them with intentional ones. But I'm trying to write a very honest book. And I could bullshit and present myself an expert, but if I want to write a book that's really honest and hopefully serves the reader, I have to be honest about my journey and the struggles I still have. And I don't know if ChatGPT knows me well enough
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
to point.
It could potentially call out areas where it's like, I think you're not being honest, and you're like, yeah, you're right. And then you would have to open up to it. And then you would have to open up to it. I see what you're saying. Can I tell you the metaphor that I put together for friendship, since your book's coming out after mine?
Yeah, please.
So I call it the garden of friendship. And within your garden, you've got four types of characters. You've got grass, flowers, birds, and a tree, or a few trees. The grass are your professional connections, colleagues, dear friends, you hear them referred to. They create a lot of coverage, they kind of build the foundation. But if you move, they don't really come with you. They get replaced a fair bit, right? But they serve a purpose. They're valuable. Then you have your flowers, and within your flowers, you've got your perennials and your annuals. And your flowers add color to your life. They're your acquaintances. They are your pickleball buddies. They're your neighbors. They're people who you share activities with, who your paths naturally cross with right now. And some of them it repeats, like your annuals, right? Your kids in a gymnastics class or whatever. You see the same people every week, or you see the same people every year of that gymnastics class. Those are your perennials. Other ones are your annuals, where, they're there for a season. And then you move, or you stop going to that church, or whatever, and they're not there anymore. But while they're there, they add color to your life, and it's quite beautiful. Then you have your birds. And your birds are really, really nice to look at, but they don't know you exist. And so your birds are your parasocial relationships. And so those are your content creators, your thought leaders, influencers, actors, whatever. Where you really enjoy looking at them, and actually that can be quite a meaningful relationship. But they don't know you exist, and you might watch them with somebody else, and then you have your tree, and your tree is your one or your few very good friends. For me, it's one. Strong in winter, right? Provide shade in the summer. It's always there. It grows slower, takes a lot of energy. And so put it together and you have your garden. And I think it's very important to categorize your friends that way and appreciate, because then you start to figure out who you invest your time with and who you don't. And also, what natural trade-offs exist. We have this giant oak tree on my yard that I'm looking at right outside of my window. And it's incredible. It's the reason we bought this house, is because of that tree. I had my office naturally designed like to have bigger horizontal windows that face the tree. My parents read to my kids underneath that tree. When nobody's looking, I'll often walk up to it and I'll just touch the tree bark a little bit. But the roots of that tree are so big and so wide-ranging that they suck all of the nutrients and the water out of the yard. The canopy is so big that it shades everything else. Basically, nothing else can grow on that side of the yard because that tree is there. Right? And so there's my metaphor for friendship. I've got to get better at talking about it, but
I love it. I really want there to be some garden gnomes in your garden.
Who would they be? Who would they
I
be?
we'll have to think about that one.
Who would be your garden gnomes? I mean, I think I very strongly believe that acquaintances and actually designing your life so that you maximize the amount of what I call positive micro interactions over the course of your day is the single most important determinant to a high quality of life, day in and day out. Do you know your mailman's name, for example? How good of a relationship do you have with your neighbors? Do you live in a place where you live in close proximity to others versus not? I think we take that for granted. And I think those people are very, very important to invest into.
Well, you know what? There's a woman named Juliana Holt Lundstedt, I think is her name, did a meta study a number of years back on the contributors to human longevity. And so some of the usual suspects were there in the top five, like not smoking, exercising. But number two was the quality of your intimate relationships. So, you know, your spouse, your parents, your kids, that kind of thing. The number one contributor was I think she called them weak ties or something like that. But it's just exactly what you're talking about. The people in your surrounding, the people you interact with day to day. And, you know, I think the relationships can be very fulfilling, but I think it's also an indicator of the type of context that you live in, right? Do you live in a place where you know your neighbors? Do you live in a place where, you know, you shop at the local butcher? You know, and I think about like in my neighborhood, there's this awesome butcher, Gasparo's. You know Gasparo's?
No,
To cross.
but I'm laughing because literally there's a line in the book that's like, pay a little bit extra for your bread at Fred's Bakery if it means you get to say hi to Fred.
Yeah. So Gasparo's is just across from Christie Pitts. And it's owned by, I think it's a couple of brothers, maybe it's more than two brothers. But every time I go in there, it's like super lively. It's kind of like a little meat party in there. Everybody's in a good mood. Everybody's joking around, having fun. I go there and it's like, you know, I'll spend 15 minutes buying meat, even though I could be in and out in 2 minutes just because it's so fun. And I think about that versus like, I'm just going to go get some meat from No Frills and, you know, use the self-checkout. And so it
Or get
points
it
to,
delivered.
yeah, or get it
Or get
delivered.
it delivered.
And so, you know, this trade-off of convenience is not a very good one. And it's very resonant for me, having come from Papua New Guinea. We spent 3 days in this remote village, about 200 people. Very, very simple village. They live in wood huts with thatched roofs. But we had the most incredible time there. People were so welcoming and they welcomed us into their community and we lived with them for 3 days. And, you know, loneliness is unheard of there. They certainly, you know, they struggle, but they look after each other. And, you know, you cannot be lonely in that village because you're surrounded by people all the time. And, you know, we've gotten away from that, and created these very isolated lives. And I think, you know, the reason you were talking about, you know, Boundless potentially joining them for one of those things, that's just an example of, you know, organizations, companies, whatever, that are spreading up to fill this void because people feel this just lack of profound lack of connection and feeling like they're a part of a community, right?
And finding
And
people like you. We love our neighbors. We really do. We're very close with a lot of our neighbors, but they're not like us, right? We go away and travel for months on end. They go to resorts for a couple weeks each year. Not all. Actually, this year, one of our neighbors came and joined us for a month, which was wonderful. A couple with three kids. They work, you know, I do whatever the hell I do for work. I'm still trying to figure that out. And you know, they're often two professionals married to one another. We love them. And there are some things that we share with them, absolutely. But there are others we don't. And so it's nice to be able to have those types of organizations where you can be close with other people. And I think what you're doing at Wayfinders is exactly that. So for anybody interested in perhaps one of Mike's trips, which are great. Like I said, I was on the one to Greenland, but also Mike's newsletter, hearing more about the book. I'm on the newsletter list. It's way/finders.com.
Hyphen.
Hyphen. Not slash.
Hyphen, yeah.
Way-finders.
Yeah.
Way-finders.com. Mike, appreciate you, bud. Thank you.
I appreciate you, too.